This is Phil Malone, who runs the cyber law clinic here at Harvard Law School, and is a fellow at the Berkman Center as well. And Phil is going to ease us into some. You were on, actually.
Is this?
No, it's off.
Okay.
You want it off?
No, I'll turn it on.
Okay. So, one of the sort of practical things about the citizen journalism field is that it's, if we're going to do it, among other things, it would be probably a good idea to do it in a way where we don't, like, lose our house to a libel suit or things of that sort. And also knowing what the difference between fair use and copyright infringement is, and a whole bunch of things that are really important. And Phil is looking at these issues and others, as are other folks, and he's going to just talk some about some of these things and how they work, and we have a some business to conduct here today as well. And we have some, luckily, we have some folks in the room with direct experience with these issues, and you'll be hearing from them as well. So Phil Malone, we'll take it from there.
Great. Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here. First, I have to say it's a fairly rare treat to be one of a very small handful of lawyers in a large classroom at Harvard Law School. So I appreciate that, and thank you all for that. For those of you who were here on Friday for Larry Lessig's talk, you may think that what we're about to talk about is what he referred to as that boring lawyer stuff. And that may be true, but it's not so boring, I think, if you suddenly find yourself on the receiving end of a headline that looks something like this, for example, in the New York Times, where a Delaware city councilman filed a lawsuit to try to identify a number of anonymous bloggers who had said things about him that he really didn't appreciate. Or perhaps no, it's okay. Let me just get out of here. Actually, if you can get the mouse to
Bluetooth range issue or something.
Yeah, I think that's what I've got. Whoops. Too many wireless things connecting with too many others. If you can just get the mouse to and then get it back. No, actually, the browser. There we go. Okay, I'll take it now. Thanks. Very sluggish mouse. Okay. Well, let's jump straight to the case that I think most of you here are familiar with, and certainly a couple of people in the audience are especially familiar with because they were involved in it. This is not the sort of headline that you want to have to write about yourself, that someone has just filed a federal lawsuit against you for defamation, libel, and copyright infringement. And this is certainly not the sort of piece of paper that you want the sheriff to come and bring to your house and give to you that night. So it turns out that there's bad news and there's good news. The bad news is once you've decided to speak out, once you've decided to add your voices to this great conversation that is citizen media and citizen journalism, you create the risk that you're going to say things or reveal things that some people don't want said and don't want revealed. And unfortunately, there are a lot of things that people can sue you for when they're unhappy. They can sue you for defamation, for invasion of privacy, for revealing their trade secrets, for infringing their copyrights, for infringing their trademarks, and a whole lot more. The good news is lawsuits against citizen journalists and really against bloggers in general are still incredibly rare. If you think about the tens of millions of people who are blogging and the many, many, many thousands of serious, credible citizen journalists who are working, it's really pretty extraordinary that the number of people who have been sued is as small as it is. Unfortunately, it's getting worse, and it's going to get a lot worse. And the other thing that's even more unfortunate and probably more important is that there are a lot of cases that we never hear about, a lot of cases that never turn into a complaint or never turn into a headline in the New York Times. They're cases that disappear because the person who is offended sends a nasty letter, or more likely has their lawyer send a nasty letter, sends a cease and desist notice, and the journalist or the blogger is afraid of the consequences, is afraid of losing their house and their car and their income, and so they take down the information. They stop reporting on what they're talking about, they take down the site, or they tone down what they've said, and the whole thing goes away. This is what Ron Coleman, who was one of the lawyers that helped Lance Dutson in the Maine blogger case, had to say about this, which is most defamation claims are brought to intimidate people. Most people know that the average blogger can't afford a lawyer and probably isn't going to have the great luck and great fortune of having Bob Cox and the Media Bloggers Association, having a bunch of pro bono lawyers jump on the case, having hundreds of other bloggers rush to his defense and publicize it, so that in Lance's case, at least, there was a happy ending, and the New York ad firm that had sued him backed down. Most people won't have that happen, and most people don't expect that to happen. So what they do is they simply give in and take the stuff down. And that's, in some ways, the real danger. That's the chilling effect on the work that you do and the work that all citizen journalists do of these kind of threats and these kind of lawsuits. Now, what I want to focus on is the at least not yet part of what Ron Coleman writes here. Because it's true, probably none of you have lawyers on retainer and have a big budget for law firms, but there are resources, and I think Lance's case illustrates that very well. And part of what we want to do today is talk to you about something that Dan and our cyber law clinic here at Harvard, and we think another cyber law clinic or two, are starting, which is a new collaboration that's designed to do really what Bob and the Media Bloggers Association and some other people are doing as well, but to try to bring it all together and do it as well as we can, and that is try to provide comprehensive information, do a better job of answering questions, tracking cases that get brought, tracking threats, actual cease and desist letters and things that never make it to cases, providing resources like legal guides, answers to legal questions, references to lawyers, groups of lawyers, and so on. In order to do that, though, we want to try to find out from you a little bit more about what you're really up against. I mean, day to day, what are the real legal issues that you face? Do you think about legal concerns at all when you do your work? Do you pull back from writing things that you might otherwise write because of legal concerns? Do you have legal concerns that are in a whole different area? You're not worried about being sued, but you're worried about, you know, how you license your own material. So that's really why we're here today. We hope to work together very closely in the near future. We hope to work with people like Bob, people like the EFF, and so on, to really pull all the resources of people who are concerned about this area together to try to get us to a situation where, as Bob described in his comment earlier, not only do people have some comfort when they're sued, but more importantly, people avoid getting sued in the first place. Now, at the end of the day, you can't always avoid being sued other than by not writing things people don't like, and that's not what anybody wants. But there are a lot of things that can be done to make sure that you understand the law, you understand the risks, and you operate as carefully as possible to avoid getting sued in the first place. to do that, I want to set the stage really quickly, and I just want to take a couple of minutes to do the most broad brush description of some of the areas where legal concerns might come into play in citizen media and citizen journalism. Obviously, we don't have time to talk about any one of them in any detail or to figure out what the answers to any one are in the time we have today, because any one is a huge job. But let me just sort of give you an idea of the range of things that we're talking about. First of all, sometimes the law is good for you, and sometimes you want to use the law. We heard in the first panel this morning, you know, people raising concerns about their writing, their content, their original work being taken by someone else and used and no credit being given. That comes up more and more in the subscription context, where you put your stuff out there through an RSS feed or some other feed, and there are sites that grab it, repackage it so it doesn't look anything like how you had it look, maybe put ads around it so they make money, and then put it out to the world with either little or no credit back to you as the original author. Most of you, whether you're blogging, whether you're in journalism for money or not, are concerned about attribution and concerned about getting credit for the good work that you do. And so the law can help you make sure that that happens, whether it's a Creative Commons license. And as you heard in the earlier comment, it isn't enough just to say, we'll use a Creative Commons license and everything is fine. There are lots of different licenses. You have to understand what do you want to do, which license, and how to use that license to achieve what you want. But affirmative licensing issues like that can actually help you. Similarly, there are times where the law can actually help you facilitate or enable the reporting you're doing. Not uncommon at all, especially on the local level, for government entities and boards and so on to want to close meetings when something sensitive is going on. Sometimes it takes the threat of a lawsuit, or occasionally maybe even a lawsuit, to open that up so you and other citizens can see what goes on. Same thing with freedom of information laws, to try to get information on things that people don't really want revealed so that you can write about it. Usually, though, the legal concerns are ones that are threatening to you. They're legal risks. Most obvious one, the one that Lance ran into, that you hear the most about, are defamation cases where people are very unhappy. And it can be people unhappy about something you wrote, or it can be someone upset about something that a third party wrote on your site, either in comments or as a guest and so on. Sometimes people sue for invasion of privacy or because you revealed things about them that they think should have been kept private and under the law are entitled to be kept private. A lot of lawsuits these days are now revolving around anonymity. It may be that a citizen journalist himself or herself needs to be anonymous for purposes of a particular story, and the person written about wants to find out who they are. Or sometimes it may be anonymous posters, anonymous commenters on your site, and the person who's suing wants to use you, either through a subpoena to you or some other way, to find out who was that anonymous person that said those nasty things about me. And anonymity also comes up in the context of sources. You know, all journalists from time to time rely on sources, and there are times where those sources are anonymous, sometimes for good reason, sometimes not. But that's an important part of reporting. It's also an important part of citizen reporting sometimes. And we're beginning to see in the citizen journalism area, just like we see with, you know, the Washington Post and the New York Times and Time Magazine, people trying to penetrate that anonymity, figure out who are your sources, who told you these things that you then used in your reporting. And, of course, there are all the issues about copyright and other intellectual property. Anytime you quote from or copy someone else's words, or if you use someone else's photographs, or if you include audio or music or something like that in your work that you create, there are issues about under what circumstances you can do that. Gets into the whole question of the fair use defense. Under what circumstances is it fair use for you to quote something or use something? And it's an incredibly complicated area. And finally, sometimes trademark issues come up. If you use a product name or a company name in a post, people sometimes get upset about that. Finally, I just want to mention fighting back. I mean, the law is also good in a very small set of appropriate cases for pushing back against people who misuse it. for people who essentially are trying to harass or trying to intimidate and chill speech without having a good faith, legitimate basis for it. One way of doing that are what are called anti-SLAPP suits. SLAPP stands for Strategic Lawsuits Against Public Participation. And that basically refers to a lawsuit that's designed to shut somebody up. People like you speaking on an issue of real public importance, and the people who don't like it, don't want it reported, file a lawsuit that really is frivolous, but the intent is to intimidate you into backing down and shutting up. Many states now have anti-SLAPP or anti-cyber-SLAPP laws that let you then turn around and sue the person who brought the lawsuit if it's truly meritless, truly frivolous, and actually recover damages. Haven't been a lot of these, but they're beginning to be an important weapon in sort of balancing things out a little bit between the people who want to chill speech and the people who are trying to actually speak and report freely. The other thing worth mentioning is something under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act that allows people to sue if someone files an improper notice with an ISP or with a web hosting company to have some of their material taken down. If someone thinks that there's a copyright violation in a post, they can send a notice, and in most cases, to be safe, the ISP or the host will take that down until it's resolved. And if somebody does that knowing, recklessly knowing that, in fact, there's no basis for it, and there's not a copyright violation, the DMCA has a way of turning around and suing. And we saw that where the law students sued Diebold in the voting machines case after Diebold tried to use the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to take down a lot of the documents that the students had posted that revealed just all the problems that existed with these voting machines. Finally, let me just note, there are a lot of resources already available. Media Bloggers Association, as an organization that pulls together lawyers who will help and so on, is terrific. The EFF Bloggers Legal Guide here is very comprehensive. It covers lots of these areas, and there's a huge amount of information there, and some others as well. But we want to try to go beyond that. We want to try to create a set of resources and a set of knowledge that really is tailored to what people are most concerned about, where the problems really are. And so we hope that you can help us a little bit today in brainstorming a bit to try to understand what is it day-to-day that you're actually running into? What sort of concerns do you have? Let me just, to start, ask for a show of hands. How many people here have actually been sued because of something that they wrote? The two people we knew we would. And how many people have been threatened with a lawsuit, either a cease and desist order? So that's 7 or 8. That's a good number out of a group this size. And how many of you have had someone send a takedown notice, a DMCA notice, to your ISP or your web host for something you wrote? So 3, 4. Okay. Well, I mean, the most useful thing for me to start would just be to hear from you. To the extent you think about these issues and the law is something, the legal stuff is something that's on your mind, what is it that you worry about? I mean, day-to-day, what are the things where you could actually use help or use information that affect what you write and how you write it? Yes. Dan?
I thought it would be fun to ask Lance if he had any hint that any of this would ever happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I think this come as a really amazing shock, but let's hear from him.
The whole lawsuit was a big learning experience, and it's really interesting to be on this side of it. And you know, it's been a little while now, and I blog comfortably and steadfastly, and don't really worry too much about being sued because I feel pretty comfortable about what I'm writing now. But prior to this, I really wouldn't have believed in a million years that I would have been sued for kind of the innocuous line of questioning that I put forward on my blog. But what I think my takeaway from that is that just as blogging is a resource for promoting my ideas in a democracy, the legal system is also a similar resource to other people. And so I was involved in kind of a political policy battle with a state agency that spilled over into the legal realm. And what I think is amazing is that the kind of revolutionary aspect of blogging and citizens media has kind of a core power, and that manifested itself in the fact that some thousand other blogs turned the light on and the cockroaches scattered and the suit was dropped, and that was that. But I think the thing that I would look at now is that before getting sued, I thought that you had to do something wrong to get sued. And now, after reading a lot of case law through the course of this and having, you know, the wits scared out of me through the course of the lawsuit, I understand that it's just a tool, and people with access to lawyers can sue anybody they want for just about any reason. And I'm pretty certain that there was no intention to ever go to court with my case, and I think that my demographic would have showed pretty clearly that that's something that couldn't have happened. And I really, so, you know, at the end result of this whole thing, when I hear people talking about pooling resources together, I think that's a great thing, and I wish there was some kind of magic bullet that would, you know, keep some kind of more fair tort system in this country or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, you can commit murder in this country and you get free legal representation, but if you defame somebody, you don't. And so anyway, I guess to answer the original question more thoroughly, I was blogging away and being really strident and adamant about my political point of view, and I got a cease and desist letter telling me that that I had to take my blog down and replace it with an apology, and then about 2 weeks later, I had a federal case pending against me, and it was like being in a whirlwind, because it was this. My blog started out as kind of a tech blog, and then I stumbled into an internet advertising issue with the state of Maine that I started criticizing, and then all of a sudden, you know, I've got a federal lawsuit against me, and I'm in my family is scared. My wife's telling me to take the blog down, and people are looking at me funny at the supermarket. And you know, it was a strange thing to be in, and it's still. I mean, my sitting here speaking about it now is still pretty surreal. But I think that the most important thing that defended me against it was the light of day being shined on it. And if there was some way that citizen journalists or bloggers could could keep that in mind about how important it is to help each other out in times like that. And I think we've seen a lot of other examples recently of people being helped out of an unfair situation like that by a whole bunch of people turning the lights on. And that's certainly what Bob and the media bloggers were able to do in a really rapid fashion. And I think that's what kind of tipped the scales.
Well, and one of the things you raise is really important, which is this huge difference in the balance of power that normally happens in these cases. Usually it's somebody that's got a lot of money. It's a corporation or someone else with a lot of money, and they're going after someone who probably doesn't. And part of trying to increase awareness and increase education is to balance that out a little bit. Some of that requires having lawyers who are willing to take on these cases for little or no money. But a lot of it, as you say, is just making sure that these things actually get attention. And that when they do, there's this huge sort of cavalry that comes rushing in to shine light on it and to bring legal resources as well as just public ones. And I think that's an important part of this to figure out, which is what sort of education or awareness is needed so that, you know, when, you know, one of 100,000 or, you know, 10 million citizen journalists somewhere gets a cease and desist notice, they don't just back down, but they know, wait a minute, I have some options. And if I just bring it to the attention of various people and get people to focus on it, then they'll actually start to get the help they need. Bob?
Should I just lean in?
The last person who gave me a microphone never got it back.
we have an on-off switch.
Point that out. First, I want to say, in terms of the number of cases out there, I mean, the motivation for me in even organizing the Media Bloggers Association several years ago was that I was on the receiving end of litigation from the New York Times, and there was no history there, so it felt very alone.
Mm-hmm. And I had never been to an event like this. I had never been to a blogger con. I had never met another blogger. And all of a sudden, I get this thing dropped at my doorstep. And, you know, what came out of that was, first of all, realizing that the blogosphere was a tool to use. I scanned everything they sent me. I took notes of every conversation. I put everything up on the web. They called a complaint about that fact. I would write about that. And they suddenly realized that everything they sent or said was going to go online and be linked by lots of other sites, and they stopped doing that. So recognizing that what maybe a tool was, an approach to dealing with that, but also, you know, just the what it's like to be on the receiving end of that and not knowing initially. You know, because it's not like there's any history for me to go for, and I didn't actually know any of the people I was emailing or reaching out to for help. But what I will say is, in terms of your numbers, because of what I do with the Media Bloggers Association, and that some of our cases have gotten a lot of media attention. For those of you who don't know, the Lance's case was, you know, went out on the AP wire. Boston Globe did an editorial. It was on the Wall Street Journal site. It was on Chicago Tribune site. It was in probably every newspaper in New England that serviced over 10,000 readers. But that has caused me to be a focal point for people who have other legal issues. So I don't think it's that rare that people are getting threatened. I said earlier to Phil that I get an email every day from somebody who's telling me some story about being threatened at their job, or threatened about losing their home, or threatened about some video they put up, or something, every single day. And today, after having said that, in the last 3 hours, I've had two more. And so it's constant, and I don't know that I have that high a profile. So I think that if we really raise the flag, I'll bet we'll find out that there's a lot of cases. And what worried me at the time with my New York Times case was not about me so much, because my father was an attorney. I had somebody to call. I sort of knew where I stood legally, what my risks were. I understood really at the end of the day they might not have been that great. And that isn't my concern. My concern is for the 100 other bloggers who got a letter and immediately shut down what they were doing on their site. And I think that's far more common. In fact, some of the, a lot of letters I get, emails I get, are from people who've already removed
right
what they took down, and now want to know what they should have done.
Right, and that's an immediate reaction for a lot of people. I mean, you know, unless you really are plugged into this and have paid a lot of attention, you know, you get this really scary sounding letter, and the last thing you want to do is take a chance and leave it up there. So I think people do default toward just taking it down. Yes, in the middle.
I'd like to ask you a quick question, and perhaps you can put your answer in the context of what this means for bloggers, but how much of what you're seeing do you think is unique to bloggers? In other words, people are going after bloggers because they're vulnerable. And how much of it, on the other hand, do you see as being part and parcel with this legal crackdown we see going on against all forms of media? I mean, this young man who's in jail right now for refusing to turn over his tape, it strikes me that if he was working for the local news station, in today's legal environment, he might still be sitting in jail. That being in the media doesn't give you the sort of protection that maybe it did a generation ago.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I don't have anything more than a gut sense of quantifying it. I mean, I do think, you know, at least with defamation cases, in theory, they're really no different if they're against a blogger than they are if they're against the New York Times. The standards are the same. You know, things people write that are bad, that legally are bad, are the same. But there is this huge difference in power. And so I think your first point, that people just, there is a widespread perception that you can chill and intimidate people into taking things down, is very strong.
Phil?
And it's not one that you have when somebody is going after the New York Times or the Boston Globe. Ian.
I've got a question about power. And actually, Bob, one reason you get these letters is that any remotely relevant search on Google or Yahoo or other search engines, you pop up. if someone is wondering what to do. What is the potential equalizing power of a number of people, bloggers and others, saying, basically, wow, what a creep about some company or person trying to shut someone up, different with government, I agree. And having the first page of Google results about that company or person doing the lawsuit have on the first page an item that says, what a creep they are. Is that any kind of equalizing thing? I'm just wondering. Jason is raising his hand. He has lots of experience with this.
Yeah, don't blog any of this. Put it in the format. You know, we were an independent company, and now we're not an independent company. So I'm going to talk to you as if we're an independent company. So a lot of the people calling these days about issues with blogs and confidential information or, you know, something they don't like, they call now and it's somebody who's a little bit higher level than it was in the beginning, and they say, how do you think we should approach this, or can we discuss this with you? I know you guys do a great job and we appreciate, you know, like in the beginning it was just like letters, and then I talked to them on the phone, I'm very aggressive, and then I'd say, oh, how old are you? And the person would go, what? I said, well, I know that you must be an associate or something, right? Like, what are you, like 25? And they would get really upset. And I said, it's okay, you can tell me, what's your name? And they tell me name, I Google their name, and they said, oh, I said, oh, you just graduated in 2004, congratulations. I said, I've been a journalist for 10 years. You have absolutely no case, so have your boss call me or file papers. And, you know, that's it, and I hang up the phone. And because they would literally send the youngest person to just go send like 50 letters to every blogger, and then they would get to us. And we had money in the bank, and when we did our original raise for Weblogs Inc., my partner Brian and I, we put $50,000 on the side, and we said, this is our legal fund, because we know this is going to come up over and over again. And I would tell that on the phone. I'd say, I know you guys, you know, are used to getting like the quick, you know, we'll take it down response. We're not going to give you that. We are going to fight it, and I'm going to blog every step of the way on our blog, and, you know, it's going to make you look really stupid. And I think the way we should handle this is, like, you know, maybe you this information got leaked this time, and maybe next time you can work it out with the people who leaked it in your company to not give it to us. And it was over and over again, their companies were leaking the data or information, and they wanted us to take responsibility for that. And I said, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but, you know, a funny one was they said to us, like, you know, you have this new information on this new product, and it's out there, and, you know, it's confidential. And I said, do you know where we got it? And the guy said, no. I said, one of your employees gave it to us at your store. And the guy was like, really? I was like, yep, and I'm going to blog that right now. And it's good, and I'm going to put your cease and desist letter, and you're going to look really stupid. So why don't we just, maybe in a couple of months, when you have a new product, why don't you give us an exclusive on an interview? We can put this in the right, put this relationship in the right direction. And he's like, that's a great idea. Thanks. And you're right on PR. And I would absolutely turn around. And then other times, like, you know, people would email and the same kind of thing. And I would CC, like, the CEO of the company. And I'd say, oh, you know, thanks, you know, for the letter. You know, it'd be a cease and desist letter. Oh, thanks for the letter. You know, we got the information, you know, from, you know, a viable source. And I'm sure you guys know about the First Amendment and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. Hey, next time you're in town, let us know. We'd love to go to lunch and hear about the new products. Best, Jason, CEO. And, man, they just turn around immediately. When you just show no fear, and I would hang up the phone. The guy would, like, try to get through. I said, you know what, this is something really for us to discuss. If you really, really feel strong about this, file a claim. And I think it would be great for everybody, the EFF, and everybody to discuss and debate it. And see how it is. You have to just take that very strong approach, and they back down immediately. And I say, if you don't want to discuss, I say, there's two choices. You can either discuss this legally, or we can just discuss this like human beings. So you make the decision. If you don't want to discuss it like human beings, let's hang up the phone right now, and you can talk to my lawyer.
There's one other component that comes out of a lot of publicity about something. And one of them is the one you just talked about, which is, you know, if they actually go through with this and there's a lot of attention paid to it, they look really stupid. The other one that I think more and more light shine on these things will reveal is just the basic one, which is if someone has publicized something about you that you don't want publicized, the worst thing to do is draw a lot of attention to it, because then it does rise to the top of Google. You know, as it is, it's just sitting out there. It may be some blogger that 12 people read and no one else, but as soon as Media Bloggers Association and the Berkman Center and EFF and other people start writing about it and 100 other bloggers start writing about it, suddenly everybody knows. And so this little secret is now completely out.
One problem was that some bloggers got very aggressive and started asking people to send us confidential information. Send us your insider information, like the top right of their blogs. And we have, like, send us tips. Yes, great. But, like, some of the, like, aggressive Apple blogs are like, do you work for Apple? Send us your trade secrets.
It's probably a bad idea.
Right. Encouraging people to break the law, that one's going to get you in trouble. Right. So there is a little bit of bloggers getting a little cheeky.
And it's, I mean, just a quick note, it's important to keep in mind that, you know, bloggers and citizen journalists are not always right. You know, there's a range, and there are plenty of people with legitimate complaints who've been defamed, whose, you know, real trade secrets have been obtained in a way that is crazy, like you just described. And
ask them to put it in the comments. So, like, they'll call and say, like, oh, this is wrong. And I say, oh, great, it's a comment, so go for it.
Yeah. Right. Yes, over.
Oh, sorry.
Maybe one on the side. Yeah, go ahead. You have the microphone.
One thing that I'm curious about is I have a blog where actually, like, sort of small-time political candidates have actually opened up their own blogs on my site and just sort of talked to people directly. And I actually enjoy that they do that, but I have no idea what kind of weirdness I've gotten into with campaign law. What if they, I don't know, solicit campaign donations? I don't know what to do.
Those are good questions. I mean, you're safe from defamation and libel because what third parties post on your site under most cases is fine. But campaign laws are a whole different question.
It's free advice.
Yeah, I know.
Well, is the Federal Elections Commission going to come after? That's what pretty,
right? Right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, what I was going to ask about is largely connected with the last few comments we're here, which is, you know, when I first got into doing what I do, I went in there with the understanding that I was trained as a mathematician, not as a journalist. And that the things that you, I assume, learn in journalism school, you know, you learn something. You go there, you learn things, you know. And when I would, when I would talk to reporters, right, many reporters. I mean, there was a certain protocol to how they ask you questions. You know, they were going to make a second phone call. They were going to verify things, get, you know, fact checking, doing all this stuff. And most of us walk into this, no training, no knowledge at all. It was very much the amateur hour. I mean, I benefited to some degree by having some good advice from, you know, a few friends who told me what you could do. As long as you had if it was a clear basis for why you were making the case that you were, then that was presumably going to be a good defense against if somebody claimed defamation or something. But, you know, one thing I really would have loved to have then, and I think probably would be very helpful now, is sort of the little pocket card of the do's and don'ts of citizen journalism. It says, these are some good standards that you should abide by if you want to try not to get into this trouble. These are the limits you can push, you know, with some level of safety. I mean, hopefully some of the links that have been shown here, maybe this exists. I'd love to actually look at them. I think that's a very helpful thing.
A wallet card.
Yeah.
Just very quickly, I think the FEC's advisory opinion carves out a pretty large safe zone for a blog that has candidates posting on it and even raising money through it. If they pay for advertising on your site, they're going to have to report that. So that'll show up somewhere. But am I right? I don't think there are many obligations on the individual citizen blogger at this point.
I don't know the details. I know the FEC has basically said, you know, we're not going to worry about blogs in the way that we worry about a lot of other things, and there's a huge amount of latitude. Where that ends up, ending up on details like a candidate posting and soliciting money on your blog, I'm not sure. But in general, you're right. It's
we have a politician
very wide.
In the room who might be able to.
Mark Cohen of Pennsylvania. The FEC deals with money, the spending of money. If somebody is paying you to give to put information on their site, then that's money that they have to report. If you were selling the right to a comment. I've never heard of a blogger doing that, but if theoretically if somebody did that, that would be money that had to be reported by the candidate. But you have no reporting obligations at all, and they only have reporting obligations to the degree that they are spending money on you. If you were giving them free space like you give anybody else in the world free space, as far as the FEC is concerned, your site has no monetary value. It may win them the election, what they're doing, but because no money is changing hands, there's nothing for anybody to report.
Just an end cap to that bit. It would be interesting if we still had the fairness doctrine, what they would say about blogging, but we don't have the fairness doctrine, so it's not relevant. But what I wanted to ask about, Phil, is have you seen anything going on about things like in some states you need a photo release to publish to journalistically publish a personally identifying photo of someone, and I've never seen it come up in blogging advice whether or not you should try to get photo releases from people who you photograph. And it came up in a bizarre way. About 2 weeks ago in Boston, there was a rally to support the people of Lebanon on Boston City Hall Plaza. And there was a citizen journalist who was, I think I can safely say without defaming him, a rabid Zionist, who took his video camera and went down there and was videoing people and saying, this is such and so, they work at such and such a place, into his microphone. And the people at the rally started sitting there going, he's profiling people, don't look at his camera, and putting a shopping bag between them and this video journalist. And so it ended up in a very strange place. If that guy were, say, a police officer, he wouldn't be permitted to go around and video and identify people at a peaceful demonstration.
He might or might not, depending on where you are.
Well, depending on, yeah. But right. But it was making people feel extremely uncomfortable. So, you know, there's some strange boundary issues there. Do you mm-hmm. know anything that's being said about that?
No, I mean, right of publicity is a sort of intellectual property issue that comes up anytime you use someone's likeness, someone's photo. It usually comes up in a commercial context. So if you're using, you know, if I want to put your photo endorsing some new product that I have and you haven't endorsed it, or if I want to, you know, create a new poster with some Hollywood star that person hasn't authorized, those are issues. Using it in a news reporting context like that, different states have different laws about that sort of thing. I don't know the specifics of
right,
the Massachusetts
there's,
one.
There's no information in the blogging guides on, you know, look at what you're doing in your state to see if you're going to end up in trouble on this. And I'd never thought of it until mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago that wasn't even there to go look it up.
Right, right. No, that's a good one. I mean, that's something that, if you're talking about news reporting of actual events where you're going to have photos and you're going to have people who are involved in them, that's a question people should think about and have some access to the specific answer to for their state.
When I was a reporter, they wouldn't let me publish any photo unless I had, you know, a statement from a standard release from everybody in the photo. You could tell who they were, unless it was a crowd scene.
Right.
I think we should. I want to thank Phil, and I want to thank you again. This is. I think we're all learning a bunch of stuff here,